It's Karen G. from Venice, California.
Thank you. I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that doesn't make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new in this room this afternoon, I want to welcome you to AA. And I always call it God's magnificent Alcoholics Anonymous, the program that saved my life. And it's going to save yours, too, if you're willing to take some real quick actions. And I suggest rather strongly that you get a sponsor this weekend, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and that you get busy and do what everybody else is doing around here. And you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 11 years. And people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. I want to thank Scott and Jim and the committee here for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege, and it's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes, and I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, God damn it, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever open my big mouth, and one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and I talked to Clancy just a couple minutes ago, and he sends you his love and very best wishes. And, you know, if anybody in this room today wants to know why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I didn't get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, which I used to think was just a terrible place to get sober, and really it's not too much better than that now, I got to tell you, but I wasn't doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand up here this afternoon, I got to tell you. And, you know, thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get me to my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally, completely turn around as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. And as I talked to him a little while ago, I said, what do you want me to talk about this afternoon? And he said, oh, quit trying to be cute. Get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They have this program already. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And you talk directly to those new people, who are the life and blood of AA. And I believe that this afternoon, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did the most important thing that I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today, you guys, and it did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell that I cannot even describe. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know what it is, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I don't know whether they have Mad Dog in Oregon or not, but I can tell you it is not one of your finer wines, I can tell you that. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. It literally makes me sick to think of it now. It just makes the hair on my neck stand up. But anyway, I literally could not believe what was going on in my life. I lost my children. I lost my husband twice, although I didn't really care about that, I want you to know. I lost my car. I lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. You know, one more time this afternoon, this is a cunning, powerful disease that kills people. And this is not a game that I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And people do indeed die from alcoholism. And, you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, you know, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest treasure that you possess. And I believe that as I stand up this afternoon, because I have found out the magic here, that I can literally divert death and misery for others by telling the truth up here. And I have rather a bizarre, off-the-wall story, and it offends people sometime. And I got to tell you guys, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life, I got to tell you. And I got a funny story to tell you about that. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 2 years ago giving a talk, and this woman came up to me afterwards, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, I want you to know, and she says to me, she says, you're disgusting. And she wasn't kidding, you guys. She was very, very serious. And it was all I could do not to choke this woman, let me tell you. And I said to her, excuse me. And she said it again. And I said, lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I got to tell you. I went on to tell her, I said, yeah, you know, furthermore, if I'd wanted you to sponsor me, I'd flown to Nashville and asked you, you know, but that was the end of that. But, you know, I hear some women get up this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. And I wonder if they didn't do all their drinking in one room, and somebody didn't shoot it to them through the keyhole, you know. I was out there big time, and I got myself into a lot of trouble, and I have been taught to free that Shirley with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the more I talk about it, the better I get, I got to tell you guys. But anyway, I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my dad was an alcoholic, you guys, and I love my father very, very much. And my dad died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether or not he ever found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. And one more time, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. I would give anything in the world if my father were alive today, because we would have one hell of a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I had a mother who died 3 months ago very unexpectedly. I love my mother very, very much, you guys. And through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm here to tell you that I was current with my mother. I had made my amends there, and we had a beautiful relationship the last 10 years of her life. And I was thinking about her this afternoon because I used to always talk to my mom before I ever gave a talk because I loved to hear what she was about to tell me. And I literally prodded her into it every given time, I can tell you. And she'd always say, "Why do you have to get up there and tell those people all that stuff about you? They're not going to like you." And I'd always say, "Mom, the rottener you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you." And she'd say, "Well, I don't understand that." And I said, "Well, you don't have to understand it." And she'd say, "Don't tell those people that you're afraid because they don't like people that are afraid." And I'd always say, "Mom, the more afraid you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you." And one more time, she'd say, "I don't get it." And why would she get it, you guys? She's not an alcoholic or wasn't an alcoholic. And she'd always end up by telling me this, and I loved to hear it. And I did it every time I could get the opportunity. She'd always say to me, "I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You come from good stock, and we don't air our dirty laundry in public." And I'd always say, "Mom, it's not dirty anymore," and she didn't understand that either. Like I said, we had a beautiful relationship, and I got to tell you guys, as I stand here this afternoon, I know that my mother is truly in a better place, I can tell you. And I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school, and she was homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap, and never made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, Texas, and just retired here recently, and now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys that as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I love my sister very, very much today. And I recently found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot in the Navy in Spain who got home from Operation Desert Storm not too long ago, who was in that first attack over there, and I am so grateful that war is over with, you have no idea. Neither one of these people are alcoholic. I have another sister who's married to the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of one hell of a bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you want to know the truth. They're highly successful people, and they bore me to tears, I got to tell you, but I have a couple kids who are 32 and 33 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I am. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. You know, I love my kids very, very much. Please don't get me wrong, but they are indeed a couple of jerks. And my oldest son's an alcoholic, and I know in our book it says we don't call people alcoholic, but I'll call him an alcoholic if I want to call him an alcoholic. He's my son, and he just got picked up for his number 9th drunk driving charge last year, and one more time he's gotten out of it. It never ceases to amaze me the crap that we get away with, and I know I'm the last person in the world that can help this kid. I can just be an example to him and keep my mouth shut, and that's what I try and do. I have another son who's not an alcoholic, and he's not a drug addict or anything like that. He's just goofy is what he is, and I love to tell this story because it shows you precisely how my life goes. I got the strangest phone call from this son of mine about 7 years ago in L.A., and he said, "Mom, I'm getting married tomorrow." And I thought, getting married tomorrow? It was a surprise to me that anybody would even have him, if you want to know the truth. And I said, "Jeff, why do you call me the day before the wedding and expect me to be back in Nebraska?" I said, "The Pope's in L.A. I doubt if I can get a flight out of here." And he said, "Mom, I don't expect you to come. It's just going to be a tiny little wedding. Don't worry about coming." Well, you don't tell people like me that stuff. I wanted to be there. And I couldn't get a flight out of Los Angeles. The planes were just jammed and stuff. And I was just in a twit. You have no idea. And And I talked to my sponsor about it. And this is the kind of loving direction I get from my AA sponsor. He said, well, what the hell are you going to do? Walk? If you can't go, you can't go. Now shut up about it. I don't want to hear another word about it. And I did. And I talked to my mom the day after the wedding. And I said, Mom, how'd the wedding going? And she said, well, it was very lovely, but who was that little girl with them? And I said, what little girl? And she said, well, apparently Jeff's got a 4-year-old daughter that you don't know anything about, and I suggest you call your son and talk to him about it. And I need to tell you guys that I was more than happy to do that. Make no mistake about that. And I called Nebraska, and I said, Jeff, how'd the wedding going? He said, well, it was very nice, Mother. And I said, who was that little girl with you guys? And he said, Mom, that's my daughter. And I said, why didn't you tell me that I had a grandbaby? I was so upset with him. Not because I had a grandbaby, because I didn't know about it. And he said, Mom, I was afraid you'd get drunk. And I thought, get drunk? I wouldn't have gotten drunk over that. At least I don't think I would have. And I was on the first thing smoking out of Los Angeles, California, to get home and meet my little granddaughter. And I got to tell you guys that this child is the icing on the cake. She is the apple of my eye. Her name is Brandy, and doesn't that just figure? You know, And she walked up to me at the airport, and she said, are you my grandma? And I said, well, yes, I am. And she said, well, you know, you're my favorite grandma. And see, that's what I want to hear. That's the stuff I strive for. And I said, Brandy, why do you say that? You don't even know me. And she says, because you wear ribbons in your hair, and grandmas don't wear ribbons in their hair. And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but I'll take whatever I can get here. And I flew her out to California when I was 7 years sober to give me a cake at my number 7th AA birthday at our Pacific Group Saturday night family meeting. And she flew out here from Nebraska, by herself. And I thought she'd be terrified to be on that airplane by herself, but I was wrong about that. She got off that plane like she owned it after sitting in the cockpit with the pilot the whole trip. And I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble because this little girl never shuts her mouth for 2 minutes, you guys. And I'm not used to being around little kids, and they drive me crazy real quick. And I said, Brandy, do you ever be quiet? You're giving me a headache. And she said, Grandma, I have a lot to say, and if you don't like it, take some aspirin, is what she said to me. I think that we have a prospective member of AA on our hands there. I hope I'm wrong about that. I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 2 years ago in January, and I looked at my second grandchild, beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife. And I got to tell you guys that tears of gratitude rolled down my cheeks because I should not have been standing there. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska last January, and I looked at my third grandbaby, another beautiful baby boy that was born to that alcoholic son of mine and his wife, and one more time the tears were rolling. Things with my family are very, very good today. It is only a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. And in my case, that's a good thing, I got to tell you guys. When I was growing up, I was a disruptive jerk as I was. Always in trouble, always getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. And I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. I've heard it with every single speaker that spoke here this weekend. And like I said, I really, truly can identify with that kind of stuff. And, you know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. But I remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that. And I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this afternoon, and I honor that. I identify myself as an alcoholic in this podium. I used a lot of drugs, too. I need to make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of drugs on the street, I'll guarantee you. But I'll also guarantee you that I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And, you know, today if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. I did everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here. That if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about it, and I love it about them. They've been the downfall of my existence my whole life, and they continue to be today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here this afternoon. I can just feel it, you know. But That's one thing I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock, I got to tell you. And, you know, I'm getting to the age now, you guys, where silver-haired men are starting to become very attractive to me, which opens up a whole new ball game, I got to tell you. And, you know, those young ones are nice, but girls, sooner or later, you got to talk to them, and they ain't got nothing to say I want to hear, I got to tell you. You know. But, I'm sure I have nothing to say they want to hear either, you know, but anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. Don't most alcoholic women? I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell out of you and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old, and I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, and used to come home and beat the hell out of me on a daily basis. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much, and I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job, and I hadn't even finished junior high yet, for Christ's sakes, and I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Nebraska. And for the first time in my life, I began to respect and admire something, and it's called nursing. And I had that respect and admiration today, too, by the way. And little by little, day by day, I was falling in love with the medical profession. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I would love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you from this podium today that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes, but when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink. I did not use any drugs during this period of time. And at the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand up here this afternoon and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, and you're no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with under ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you today is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism, I guess. At the age of 27 years old, I went to work in an operating room there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in surgery. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position, and I drank and I ran around with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they played hard. And I need to tell you that the incidence of alcoholism amongst the medical profession is tremendously high, and that ought to do a lot to your security level if you're going to have surgery next week. But it happens to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, I ran around with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man, and girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And let me tell you, I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. And you know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in a general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. We have a little town in Nebraska, and it's called Palmyra, Nebraska. And it's a town of about 200 people. And I can tell you from personal experience that that town of 200 people, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I can tell you that. I've been to a party in Omaha, and the girls I was with, 2 nurses I was with, told me, they said, Karen, the party's been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I'd met 2 guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys wanted to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, nor the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, at 2 o'clock in the morning in February, stark naked, walking down the highway in my high heels carrying my purse. And I need to tell you that in February, it's a tad bit nippy out there to be doing that. And tonight I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can tell you that. And I remember thinking to myself, what am I going to do? Well, you walk is what you do. And of all the luck, the first person I ran into was a state pig. And you know, in Nebraska, the cops travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. And down where I live now, they're a little bit smarter than that. And this guy stopped his squad car, and he rolled down his window. He turned on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. And he said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. And one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop, and I said, I'm not getting in your squad car because you might try and rape me. And he said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And that made me madder than anything that was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from the Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I'll guarantee you. They were very busy that night at that downtown jail. They did not have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for hitting her, for hitting him, for kicking in his windshield, all the delightful antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to go downtown and booked in that cop's raincoat. You know how cops keep raincoats in the trunk of their car for these occasions. And to be in that courtroom the very next morning when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, who did not know I was in that courtroom, came up to me. And he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody. You know. And we all know better than that, you know. And that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. If you're going to drink, these things are going to happen occasionally, so what, you know. But I did learn one thing from that event I want to share with you. What I learned was don't ever drink with men from Council Bluffs, Iowa. And I kept right on drinking, let me tell you. And I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital that I worked at in surgery in their emergency room. And I'd been at the horse races this time. And you know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm not supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth, let me tell you, when I'm drinking. And I have a big mouth in sobriety, but I can tell you that pain is the teacher here. It's getting a lot better. And I'd smarted out to some guy at that horse race track, and he belted me right in the teeth is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me as long as I live. I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are such a good nurse and stuff. He said, we think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacity this man had that he would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get the hell out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks and all the stuff that we do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought to myself, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. And besides that, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. Those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud of that. And if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is it's like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. And I'm sure he feels the same way I do. As a matter of fact, I know he does. I danced this man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And like I said, I'm not proud of that. And I love to tell you this story I'm about ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I always say, okay, Clancy, I won't tell it anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell, let those people see how sick you really were and how apparently sick you really still are. And I'm still sick and I still think it's funny and I'm telling the story. Besides that, this guy in the front row here wants me to tell you. He already told me. When I married this guy again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'm going to kill you the next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason. I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk. They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. I will say that when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. And And that guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed, let me tell you. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, with his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I got to tell you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. You know, there's one thing that we should never do, and that's drink and think at the same time. And this is about 18 years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. Super glue was powerful stuff, and you did not want to screw around with super glue. And I knew that this stuff worked very, very well because my kids were nailing down my house with it, let me tell you. And I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue in my drunken stupor. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over to this guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place on this man that did not have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true, but I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can tell you that. We had a telephone by our bed there in our bedroom there in Lincoln, and he called the cops, and the police were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they don't see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me to believe the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at those cops and I said, what about my arm that he broke? It was always me, me, me. It was never about anything I did to anybody else. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you can't arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add. And it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton, and if anybody in this room's thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to, you know. I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I gotta tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I'm getting the hell out of this marriage, because when this guy comes home from the hospital, he's gonna glue something to mine shut, and he would have too, I gotta tell you. And I divorced that man one more time, and God only knows I couldn't have that happen, you know. But I will tell you guys on the brighter side of things here this afternoon that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work, because we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives with his new wife and stuff. And I tried to tell Clancy, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't give a damn whether you're sorry or not. Get on the airplane and do what I tell you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room today that that guy kind of backs up when he sees me, I got to tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends there. And I can tell you guys that I walked away from that man. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I can tell you that the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming true in my life when I made those amends. So I know this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. At this time in my life, I got involved with the most bizarre man I have ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was starting to take Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. And it was beginning to be no more fun to be doing it, I got to tell you guys. You know, I love the bars, and I love the men. I love the sex. I love the music. I love all the crap that goes on in there. I fit in there like a glove. And I particularly like what goes on after the bars close, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun thing. It would be a lie for me to stand here today and say anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun. I have to remember the pain that it caused me. And I almost lost my life as a result of this disease, I can tell you. And it is my career that I had never done before. And the day came for me that hospital told me, they said, Karen, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Gluing husbands, drunk driving charges, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything that you do in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you're either going to a treatment center or you no longer have this job. And you guys, you know, you don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved more than anything in the whole world, and I cannot say that enough today. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Nebraska, and what I'm about ready to tell you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from an AA podium. It took me years of my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself stealing drugs in that nursing home. I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and anything I could get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. And the day came for me that the people that ran that place came up to me and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You're just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. And I threw my narcotic keys at them and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview and I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level in my bloodstream that I would not shake and had those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink. I had to take drugs. I had no more choice in any of it. And I can tell you guys that the fun was all over with me. It was something I had to do. And when it turns to be something like that, I can tell you it's a whole different ball game. And I hated myself so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I kept that job for 3 months doing the same thing as I was doing at that nursing home, justifying in my head, I don't mean to do this. I'm not a bad person. This is a temporary thing. This is the last time I'm ever going to do it. And we all know that never happens for us. We just jump from the fat to the fire here. And the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from that hospital. And this has got to be the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotics keys and you get the hell out of this hospital and don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done it too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short for me here today, I lost my nursing license. I threw the one thing that I loved more than anything in the whole world right down the toilet so I could drink. And like I said earlier, that is total insanity. And there's a reason for that, you guys. With me, the alcohol had to have it all. It had to take every single thing I had before I would pay attention to this disease. And to make a long story even shorter for me here this afternoon, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I have traveled all over the Midwest. I prostituted myself. I've done anything I had to do to get that alcohol and drugs. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again. You know, and my sponsor assures me that I'm still a very ill person to be thinking that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that did not happen to me out to those streets as a practicing female alcoholic. And 2 years went by for me. And there I was back there in Lincoln, Nebraska, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you guys. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live. And I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed out on the streets is what happened to me. But before that, that happened, I remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking, 2 years ago I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there. And, you know, I really can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward of the very hospital that I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years, and I can tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person, and I only weighed 95 pounds the day I got sober, and I was coming off a quart or whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. And that is a lot of booze, that is a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to do, I got to tell you. You know, I don't know how many people in this room this afternoon have been through withdrawal, but I can tell you it is not a pleasant experience, let me tell you. And the very thought that I might have to go through that again just makes the hair on my neck stand straight up, I got to tell you. And I was standing there, laying there in that intensive care ward. I had tubes coming out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I just wanted to die is what I wanted to do. And obviously, I couldn't even do that right. And I used to scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody should have to go this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility, you guys. They knew exactly what they were doing with alcoholics. And they went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. And you need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful for this as long as I am sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got about 10 people from AA to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. And I grew to love these people in Alcoholics Anonymous very much. And I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life that I got sober, you guys. And my family wanted absolutely nothing to do with me, period. They've been through it too many times. They were not going to go through it again. My mother had to be hospitalized because of me and put on tranquilizers. And I have not forgotten that by a long shot as I stand up here today. My mother did not deserve that, let me tell you. And so for the first time in a long time, people were talking to me again. And like I said, I grew to love these people very, very much. And they would say things to me like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date. And they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked into that official treatment program of that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other. But apparently, I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous there. And that is the ultimate goal of any good treatment center, I got to tell you. And I walked into group therapy for the first time. And, you know, I needed you guys so desperately on day one. But let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I turned on you like you cannot even believe when you started telling me what to do. And I walked into that group, and I don't know how many people in this room today have been through group therapy, but it is not a pleasant experience, I can tell you. And I was absolutely terrified, but I wasn't going to let these people know about it, let me tell you. And there was 14 men in that group, and they were all younger than I was and stuff, and in there for drunk driving charges and stuff like that. And I couldn't identify with these people. I'd done those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me, and he said, you think you're better than everybody else here, don't you? And I made a comment to this guy that I was to pay for a long, long time in that treatment center. I said, yeah, you asshole, and you can put your name at the top of the list. I was in an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, you guys, and that is a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program. And I completed that inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way that you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We do whatever the hell we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you know, you guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand up here today. But I got to tell you, in 1982, I could have cared less one way or the other what these people thought. And you know, you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. And that's exactly what happened to me. Thank God that's what happened to me. And this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me out of an AA meeting one day, and he said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't need to read the book and they don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, he said, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to go up and hear this man speak, and you're going to ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I'd heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee you I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And you know, for the old-timers here today, I paid that money back, too, by the way, I got to tell you. And I can also tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life. And my life has never been the same since that talk, and I'll tell you why. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. And I knew what was wrong with me. I knew what I needed to do about it. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted this man for my sponsor. And I found myself walking across that floor and asking that man to be my sponsor. And I need to also add here, I never would have done that in a million years, asked Clancy to sponsor me. That is how God works in Karen Garrison's life. I have to believe that. And I walked up to this man, and I said, Clancy, I would like to ask you to sponsor me. And he looked at me, and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And I thought to myself, why do you say that to me? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact that these old-timers had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if they brought me up if he would talk to me. And he said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap. Thank God he saw through my crap. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on a long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you're probably going to go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day till I tell you not to call me every day. You're going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're going to become an active, viable member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. And you're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And I got to tell you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous began. And I said two words that I never would have said this to him. Never. I said, yes, sir. And I'll guarantee you that I say it today, too. One more time, God working in Karen's life, I got to tell you. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. And I wound up by sponsoring 56 women in that town. And I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love those women very, very much. And I'll tell you why. For the first time in my sobriety, I got so close to women, I could not even believe it. And they literally showed me for the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women are still sober today. It's not because of me. It's because they're active, viable members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Clancy, you know, it wasn't long that I had this man for a sponsor that I could clearly see he was going to get right square in the middle of my life. And I didn't like it, let me tell you. And he was asking me things like, what do you do for a living? And I thought that was awful nosy of him, don't you? You know, and how are things with your family? And on and on. And I thought, this is the most nosy man I've ever met before in my life. I really don't know what I thought sponsorship was all about, but it certainly wasn't what I thought it was about, I can tell you. And he said, what did you do for a living, Karen? And you guys, I sat there and I just cried and cried and cried. And I told this man that I had lost my nursing license. I literally could not talk about it. Hell, I can barely talk about it today if you want to know the truth. And he said, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell this man, I cannot go through that kind of humiliation. And he said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. And he said, get up to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and you tell those people that you have been sober in AA for 2 years that you would like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that is, without a doubt, the most important thing I can say from this podium today. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went up there and asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I got to tell you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, one of the happiest days of my life occurred about 8 years ago. And one more time, I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. And what they told me literally brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. What they said to me was, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And I can tell you guys, no, 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 no. I had nothing to do with that. I had absolutely nothing to do with it, I got to tell you. And you know, I'm truly grateful that as I stand up here today, I got to tell you, I have it back, you guys. I have my profession back, thanks to you. And I thank you for that. And, you know, it wasn't long before I went out to visit Clancy a couple times in Southern California. I fell in love with Southern California AA. I truly believe that I am in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. Whether you believe it or not is immaterial to me. I don't want to hear about it afterwards. I know that I am in the mecca of AA in the whole world. And I told this man on the phone one day, I said, Clancy, I want to move to Southern California. I want to belong to the Pacific group. I want to live on that crazy Venice beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd fit in like a glove, and I'd not been wrong about that either. And I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I want to be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. And you guys, every single one of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. You know, I love this program so intensely, I cannot begin to tell you. And I want to share a couple quick stories, a couple quick things that my sponsors taught me that has literally turned my entire life around. Clancy taught me early on, there's three things that I want you to do. I want you to run to your problems and not from them. I want you to do what you don't want to do and you're going to stay sober. And then I want you to do what's in front of you. And I said, oh, well, what the hell does that mean, do what's in front of you? And he said, for you, my dear, it means getting up and going to work. It means cleaning the bathtub, cleaning the toilet. Do whatever you do that needs to be done. You can see what's in front of you. Do what is in front of you and you're going to stay sober. And I thought, well, what does cleaning the toilet have to do with staying sober? But I did it anyway. And anyway, you know, Clancy taught me. He said, where are you at with your spiritual program? And I said, Clancy, I don't have a spiritual program. What the hell are you talking about? I can't believe in this stuff. I don't believe in God. He said, I got some news for you, hotshot. You don't have to believe in God, but you got to take the actions anyway. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he pointed out to me where it says clearly that I get a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual maintenance with a power greater than myself. And he went on to tell me, there's going to come a day in your sobriety when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you had better have a God in your life or you're going to be dead from this disease. And you guys, as I stand up here this afternoon, I believe that with all my heart because it's happened to me several times in my sobriety. And one more time I said to my sponsor, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning, and I want you to get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Don't pray for things, pray for God's will, and maybe one of these days something will happen for you. And I got to tell you that something for me did indeed happen. In 1985, I found myself at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in Montreal. And if you haven't experienced a World Conference, it is a magnificent experience, one that none of us should ever miss. And I hope that you all come to San Diego in 1995 because you're going to get to see it all over again. And I told Clancy on the phone, this thing isn't working with me with God. I don't believe in God. I don't feel any connection here. And he said, Karen, are you staying sober today, one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And there I was in Montreal at the World Conference, and I'd driven up there with a couple of girls that I sponsored, and they didn't even want to go to this thing. And I said, you are going, because I can't afford to go by myself. And we only had like $200 apiece. We had no place to stay, and those hotels were like $100 a night, and we didn't care. We were going to that World Conference. If we had to sleep outside, we were going to go. And we got up there, and we found an apartment to rent for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 56,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And I need to tell you guys that I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous, in absolute awe of this program. And they were down there on that football field, and they were practicing for a flag ceremony. And I know this all sounds real corny to the new people, but the longer I stay sober, the cornier I get for some reason. My sponsor was down there helping them practice for this flag ceremony. And I ran down to tell Clancy hi, and alcoholics from all over the world carrying their national flags. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today when I meet people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Clancy introduced me to these people. And I ran back up, and I joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And as long as I live, I will never forget this, as long as I live, when the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 56,000 sober alcoholics go absolutely crazy. And I looked around myself, and I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people, and all the people in between. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I, too, wanted to love this program, you guys, and I just could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes that I did not try and stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said to myself, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me to love this program as much as these people do. And you guys, I cried and I cried and I cried. And I can tell you that for one solid second, my world stopped. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally could not get sober, And here she was, 3.5 years sober. I personally believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is divinely inspired. It has to be. And if you stick around here long enough, you're going to believe it too, I got to tell you guys. And I have talked to that God every day sincerely since. And I can tell you, in that football stadium, that chills literally ran up and down my spine. And I can tell you that in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we see when we're ready to see and we hear when we're ready to hear and not before. But those actions my sponsor taught me got me to that point, I got to tell you. So if you're new in here this afternoon and you're having trouble in the area, don't worry about it. Just do it anyway. Just do it anyway and something's going to happen for you someday. Like I said, Clancy taught me to do what's in front of me, you guys, and I love to tell this story. This is my most favorite story to tell, and I love it to tell it to members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I work at UCLA in surgery. I have a magnificent job, but it's just a damn job is all it is, and my sponsor has taught me that God and AA have to be center core of my very existence. Not some man, not some job, nothing. It's God and AA. Everything else revolves around that, and I believe that as I stand up here this afternoon. And about 3 years ago, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to bitch about it, I'm sorry to say. And I'd worked 72 hours this one particular week, and you know what we're like when we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I worked the night shift over there, and I had the night off that night, and I'd been to a meeting earlier in the evening, and I went home and I went to bed early. I was just exhausted. And my boss called me at 2 o'clock in the morning, and my boss is from West Germany, and she makes Clancy look like a pussycat, I got to tell you. This woman is probably the best nurse I've ever met before in my life, and one of these days when I grow up, I want to be just like her. And she called me, and she said, Karen, I got a real problem over here tonight. I got about 18 people sick. We're going to do a transplant on a little girl over here. I need your help. And she hung up on me is what she did. You know, and I thought to myself, I don't have to go to that job. I worked my ass off this week. I'm not going. And I thought, I'm going to call my sponsor and talk to him about this. Well, I'll tell you what, I don't want to talk to Clancy about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I know what he would have said anyway. He would have said, do what's in front of you. Get your ass to work. And so that's exactly what I did. And the most precious thing happened for me over there. Thank God I went to work, you guys. And we were going to do a transplant on a little girl that was about 3 years old, a liver transplant. And I sent my orderly upstairs to get this little girl. And we had a jet coming in from the East Coast with a liver for this child. We had some time to kill here. And he brought this little girl down to surgery. And he called me in the back and he said, come out front and get your patient. You're not going to believe all the people that are with his family. And I thought, well, that's nice that they have the support. I was such a crab, I couldn't believe it. And I went out front and the first thing I noticed was about 70 people with his family. And I thought, this is highly unusual. All these people here at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I noticed the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the father was good looking and stuff. And you guys, I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level that I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I looked into the most beautiful blue eyes I have ever seen before in my life. And this little girl was so sick, she couldn't even lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick. And she was hanging on to this little bear. She had a blanket wrapped around this bear. And she was hanging on to him for dear life, I got to tell you. And I bent over and I was talking to her. And I said, oh, you brought your little bear down to surgery. And she tried to tell me that her little bear was so sick he was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear. You know, we sent the family out to the waiting room, and the mother was just an absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And I could easily see that these people were being of tremendous support to this family, and I was fascinated by these people. And anyway, we took this little girl back to surgery, and she looked at me, and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand it when my mommy cries. And I, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys, I was able to tell this little girl the truth. I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so much. And she said, I can't stand it when my mommy cries. And we couldn't do anything else about that. And we put that little girl to sleep. And I got to tell you guys that 16-hour liver transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss and things. But she survived that 16-hour liver transplant. I have never seen in my entire career an operation room team full of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that night. And 90 units of blood, and 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And we were very, very scared for her, I got to tell you. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA. You may not see these transplant patients because they want to know where the organs come from. We cannot tell them, and it's best not to see them afterwards. Well, I don't need to tell anybody in this room today that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And in my opinion, some rules are made to be broken. And I thought to myself, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. And she was 6 days post-op from the 16-hour liver transplant. I went up to her room, and I opened the door to that child's room. And you guys, I could not believe what was in front of my eyes. My God, the power of God. The power of God. Here was this little baby girl, and she was jumping up and down in her crib. It was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. She had her diapers hanging around her knees. Her mother had French braided her hair. She had ribbons hanging out of her hair. She had this bear in one arm, and she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And in the other arm, she had a baby bottle, and she was rocking this bear, and she was singing to him and stuff. And something caught me. That whole room full of people were in that room, I got to tell you. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. Now, if you think I'm going to stay out of that room, rules are made to be broken in this situation, I got to tell you. And I was in that room like a flash, and they thought they didn't know what hit them, to tell you the truth. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so is my husband. And her sponsor was there, and his sponsor was there. And those 72 people, you guys, were all members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they had driven 500 miles to be with this family. And I need to tell you that I was impressed. Let me tell you, I was impressed. And I asked the mother, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. And I thought, oh, wow, her little girl up for the first time on her birthday. What a magnificent present. And I went over to the little girl, and she looked at me, and she stopped dead in her tracks, and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. I have my surgery stuff on, and it scared the hell out of her, I got to tell you. And if I'd known I was going in that room, I certainly would have changed clothes and stuff. And you guys, she handed me her little bear, and she said, you take him home and take care of him. He's so sick, he needs a nurse to take care of him. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But I got to tell you that bear is my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here we were, you know, the nurses got wind of all this, and we got a cake to celebrate the mother's 5 years of sobriety. And I'll tell you guys, it turned out to be just one of the most magnificent days of my life. And I remember thinking to myself, I need to reciprocate here. You know, what can I do? I wasn't prepared for a birthday party. And I remembered something that was in my pocket that Clancy had given me when I was 5 years sober. And I'd hung on to this medallion for 2 years too long, I got to tell you. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we say, you got to give it away to keep it. You got to give it away. And I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say, but I knew I had found the person to give my 5 years my five-year medallion to. And I found myself walking up to this woman and giving it to her. And I told her the history of that medallion. And she said, oh, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave that to you. Please keep it. I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really did mean that, you guys. And anyway, I called my sponsor on the telephone. We got all those people over to the Pacific group that night. And I don't need to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous that night. I love you guys so intensely, I cannot begin to tell you. And people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, that I may forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked with me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately today as I needed you in 1982. And you've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love you more than anything in the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell that I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to sit down here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row in Nebraska to where I stand today in Oregon, and I can tell you that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. I'm going to say one more thing. If you're new in this room today, I don't sell to you. I give to you the program that saved my life. Thank you for having me, and let's all stay. Thanks.